Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis with Podcast UFO, and welcome to episode number 11 with Steve Firmini. He is the director of New England MUFON. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/auctionpodcast, and you can listen to us on your smartphone on Stitcher. We have that free app right on our website. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy today's show. Hi, everyone. This is Martin, and I'm in Leominster, Mass. with Steve Firmini. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
And can you tell, you're in MUFON, New England MUFON, can you tell us what you do?
I'm director and a researcher and investigator for New England. We do have other investigators in New England, not as many as we would like to, because we're always looking for more. We do investigations, we do research, we do public relations, and educating the public on the topic of UFOs.
And how has this New England had a chapter or whatever it is ever since MUFON started?
Well, MUFON's been around for over 40 years now. And there have been chapters in the six states in New England. Some of them have become defunct at times. The people have lost interest, and at that time, as director for Massachusetts, I was put in a situation of temporary state directors for the other five states, because they had nothing really active going on, and the state directors weren't active anymore. And I suggested to MUFON headquarters. At that time, it was Jim Carrion, the international director, that if I'm going to be doing that, why don't we turn it in? It'd be so much easier if we just turned it into one organization for now and did it that way.
Now, I grew up in the area and moved around different parts of the country, and I came back recently, only about a year ago, from California. And when I was here growing up in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of things going on back then. Matter of fact, I've heard it was referred to at one time as like the wave, the New England wave, or, you know, probably very loosely. What's the activity like these days?
We get constant sightings. I'll get probably two or three cases a week.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. It's since we've, I think what's happened is that with the internet now, and the publicity, more people are learning. You know, I don't think it's that more people are seeing UFOs. It's more people know where to go to report them.
Right. I mean, without the internet, I'll just tell you a situation. Years ago, I was outside, and a big fireball came. You know, a meteorite, and it was huge. And I didn't know. I wanted to call because I thought it was going to crash and kill a bunch of people and all that. Ended up, it was in CNN in China. So the thing was up high enough, but it was huge. But I had nowhere to go. I didn't know who to call.
Exactly. Fireball media, they're more common than what people realize. And so usually it's a red flag when somebody says it looked like a fireball flying across the sky.
Yeah. I didn't consider that a UFO. I mean, I thought... You know, I thought it was exactly what it was.
Yeah, but it can make it look like it's a lot closer than it is, and that it's going to crash a lot closer over the horizon.
That's what it looked like. Yeah,
exactly. I've seen several myself.
Have you? Are you an astronomer of any kind? Have you?
I'm amateur astronomy. Yeah. In order to do investigations, I've been doing this for over 30 years. So, in that time, I've become an amateur in a lot of different things, in the atmospheric things like auroras and things like that. So I have connections with a lot of things like that too. We use as tools when we're doing investigations.
Yep, I have seen aurora here before in the past. You don't see it too often, but every once in a great while you see it. It's quite amazing. This morning when I contacted you or to come out here, you were doing an investigation. Was that local?
This was as a matter of fact, in Leominster.
Right in this town.
Where it occurred, but it's a historical case.
Oh, I see.
It happened when the person was 17 years old.
Anything we can talk about?
Well, I can say that it was I can't go into any detail.
Yeah.
But I can say that the witnesses were driving down this country road, and that they saw something coming through the trees. It looked like two car headlights. Mm-hmm. And the next thing they know, it was 3 hours later, they were in downtown Leominster.
Really?
And they felt like they were drugged.
Wow. That sounds similar to the case that was out west. And do you know who I'm talking about, the guy that was in lumbering?
Yes, it was Travis Walton. Right. Snowflake, Arizona.
Yeah, yeah. So it's similar. It's like, but he showed up 5 days later. And with all the investigations and all the sightings, and do people ever talk about abductions here?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I did a case, an attempted abduction case in New Hampshire, so the year before last.
Uh-huh.
I investigated a case. It was attempted abduction where the car was actually lifted and dropped.
Really?
There was actually physical damage, and I have actually photographs and proof that there was damage to the ground area around it, and it was over $3,000 undercarriage damage to the vehicle.
Wow. So it was they tried to make off with the car with the people in it?
I guess it was a botched abduction attempt. You know, nobody's perfect, I guess, even the aliens.
Well, yeah. I mean, they crash every once in a while, too. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. And I was going to ask you what some of the more interesting cases, and that must be right up there.
That was probably the latest one that's of interest, and the one in Leominster also. I think that is because we have a police report on it and everything. Cause I talked to the police department about it. The police department was actually called that night by the witnesses, and the police officers saw the damage to the vehicle.
Can you talk about how they described what happened?
Well, they were out in a parking lot at this recreational area in New Hampshire, and it's up in the lakes region.
Yeah.
And they were sitting there. It's like a secluded part of the parking area. They were sitting there parking, looking at the car. They were saying they were looking at the moon and the stars.
Mm-hmm.
So they were facing the moon, and they saw like a dark object, a dark mass pass in front of the moon.
Wow.
And it went from right left to right. And all of a sudden, went from right to left. And the girl said, well, what the heck was that? And so they're watching this thing. And all of a sudden, it seemed to, when it wanted to stay still, it turned into like an orb or a ball. And when it wanted to go faster or move, it would flatten out almost like a cigar.
Wow.
And the thing started coming towards them. And when he saw the thing coming towards them, he jammed the car in the reverse, backed out, and took off, tried to get out of there. But the only problem was that in order to leave that parking lot, they had to make a couple turns to get back out onto the main road. And when they made the turn to go towards the main road, they were flying right towards the path of the object.
Hmm.
The object ended up directly above them, and they felt the car start to rise.
Jeez.
He looked over at his girlfriend, who was in the passenger seat, and her torso was out the window as if she was being pulled up, and his arm, his left arm, was being pulled up.
Wow.
And in his struggle to pull himself back in, he accidentally hit the horn, and it started to grip on him, started loosening up, and he kept struggling and struggling because it came back, the grip came back more as if they were being pulled up more and more, and he accidentally, or he doesn't remember whether he did it accidentally or on purpose this time, but he hit the horn again. That's when the vehicle was dropped.
Wow. So they're scared of noise. Anything that works.
I guess.
Wow.
But and they just took off like a bat, you know, and flew up and went to the boy's mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, the mother, I interviewed the mother, and they were flipping out. They were scared. I mean, they wouldn't go outside alone for a couple of weeks after.
Yeah. I know a part of, you know, there's so much skepticism in things like this. And that's probably, it didn't really come out anywhere. It wasn't in the paper or anything like that, was it?
It was, as a matter of fact.
It did go in the paper.
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm. It did go in the paper. We tried to keep things anonymous with them because of their age.
Yep.
They were both teenagers, and
Well, then they weren't really staring at the moon, were they? I wasn't at that age.
Probably not, but I wouldn't want to make any insinuations. Yeah.
Yeah. So what else comes to mind that was very interesting? You said you've been doing this for 30 years? Mm-hmm. 30 years. So you've seen or heard a lot of stories in all these years.
Oh, well, definitely. I get phone calls all the time now. It says when you're doing this and you're a director of an organization, you get your phone rings off the hook. You get these messages, but there's that. You know.
Now, do you try to screen people, like to see if they're for real? I mean, do you have people that are just sort of hoaxing? Do you ever have that happen?
So you can usually pick. There's always a possibility that somebody's trying to pull your leg.
Yeah.
So you can usually tell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right away with the when you're interviewing the person. Yeah. That's why I like to do a phone interview before we go too far into a case.
You mentioned that there was like physical evidence. Can you talk about some other times where you've actually seen either landing evidence or any other type of evidence involved?
Oh, I did a case in Massachusetts probably about 10 years ago in Western Mass, where there was not a burnt patch of grass, but it was an area after, this was probably about more than three or four years after sighting happened, because it started happening when she was a little girl, and kept happening, you know, after she was when she grew up, and there was a patch of area alongside in where they near where they lived, where it was all grass before, and this area where this craft had landed at one time. Grass won't grow around it anymore. It's just a patch of dirt.
Wow. Is it circular? Was it a circular?
This was an irregular, irregular pattern, not like a circular.
Now, when you mentioned earlier about the craft taking different forms, you know, you hear of things like that. For instance, like Rendlesham Forest, when the craft split up into like five balls of light, you know, and then goes in different directions. It's really, it just goes to show that we really have no idea what these things are.
Exactly. And it possibly could be too in the New Hampshire case. It could be something as simple as that it was up on its side when it looked circular.
Oh yes,
tilted back down, it would look cigar shaped.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
so that's, it could be something as simple as that also.
Yeah
in that case.
Yeah, because well, there's been a few pictures where you see like the saucer shaped thing on its 45 degree angle, or
right, yeah,
an angle doesn't mean just because we think it's straight up and down that they have to think it's straight up and down. Yeah. So why don't you go ahead, if you would, and talk about a couple of other interesting situations that you can think of here in New England.
Well, I mean, there's so many cases. We get a lot of triangular craft cases. With those cases, I'm not too sure that that's something extraterrestrial, because I think the government's working on triangular craft. That there's a rumor going around that there's this project going on where they have this triangular-shaped craft that can actually alter the forces of gravity.
It's only a matter of time before they figure that out anyway.
So, but my point is, if they're doing this and it's the military flying these things around, why are they doing it in public?
Yeah, or why are they doing it in the daytime with, you know, where people can see it or where they can see it?
Well, if they are doing it, you can't say they're not trying to hide something from you.
No, I guess they would never do that.
Maybe they think that if they do it right in front of people, nobody will believe it.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. How many of the cases would you say can be explained away of that you get calls on?
Well, historically, I'd say 85 to 90% can be explained as one thing or another. Yeah. But there's that other 10 to 15%.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's across the board everywhere.
I'm going to Rhode Island next Monday, and I'm investigating a triangle craft case there. It was a low-level close encounter triangle case, and it went into an opening in the clouds in the sky. It looked like there was like this green mist, and this door kind of opened, and this big triangular craft went into that door. And
One of the things a friend of mine who's a skeptic, I bring him up quite a bit in this podcast, or I have lately. He says, with all the cell phone cameras out there, why aren't people taking more images? And what would do you get cell phone images?
All the time. If you look at the quality of cell phone images, somebody can take a picture of a light or an object and it'll look like a pinpoint star when you get the photos. I mean, cell phone cameras are not are not very good use when you're taking pictures or something like that. You need a good quality camera.
Yeah.
Even with good quality cameras, it's difficult.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of people send you pictures?
Yeah.
By the way, let's say your website address before I forget.
It's www.newenglandmufon.com.
Yeah.
And you can go to the national website, which is www.mufon.com.
Right. Now, when I first looked you up, I saw your name in the Exeter, New Hampshire on the roster as a speaker there, I believe. Does that go on every year?
It has the past 3 years. I haven't been in touch with the people. We haven't actually started organizing for this year yet,
mm-hmm.
So we're hoping to have another one this year.
Yeah. Now, wasn't there some type of incident in Exeter at one time?
Yes, there was. There was actually two things. The Bonnie and Betty Hill case happened close to, not far from Exeter, in Portsmouth. The incident in Exeter happened on the outskirts.
Yeah, it's called the incident in Exeter, right? And what was that about?
It was a young man was in the military. I think it was just before he went into the military, or he was out on leave. I forgot exactly what the case was with that, but he was walking down hitchhiking down a road on the outskirts of Exeter when this reddish light started coming towards him from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that there was a white farmhouse right near the area, and the red light actually made the house look blood red, the effect it had on it.
Mm-hmm.
The object came down. The light came down so low and buzzed him that he ended up having to dive in a ditch.
Wow.
It scared him so much, and he's not the type of person that would be scared. He was a pretty brave guy, wasn't afraid of much.
Mm-hmm.
He flagged the car down and got a ride to the Exeter police station. When he went to the police station, the police officers, said, he was flipping out. He was panicking. Mm. And so one of the officers went back to the area with him. They were looking around, didn't see anything. All of a sudden, they were just ready to leave. And all of a sudden, him and the officer see the same thing.
Mm.
Then all of a sudden, another officer radios him from another part of town. He was seeing the same thing. So yeah. That's pretty much the extent.
Yeah. Well, when was that? Do you remember what year that was approximately?
It was in the 60s, mid to late 60s,
yeah.
I think.
It seems to me that, like I said, I grew up in the area, and it seems to me in the 60s, mostly in the 60s, you heard of a lot of activity. South Berwick, Maine, there was something going on up there. Mm-hmm. And then I also remember some people were hoaxing, too, with they purposely hoaxing a few times in a gravel pit or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know MUFON has their main headquarters. I think it's in Colorado. Is that right?
It used to be in Colorado. It used to be in Denver. It's now moved to, because we have a new international director. The other international director, Clifford Clift, he retired.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll still be involved with MUFON in some ways. Our new international director is David McDonald. He's out in Kentucky.
In Kentucky?
So the headquarters has moved to Kentucky.
I see. Okay. But most states, and with the exception of New England, has their own MUFON. Can you tell the listening audience that's not really familiar with it, what exactly is MUFON?
MUFON is the largest civilian scientific UFO investigative research organization in the USA, if not the world. Right now, mm-hmm. We've been around for about 40, 41, 42 years, I think it is. Very well organized. We have a automated system for reporting sightings, and you go on to either newenglandmufon.com or mufon.com. You can go right in. It has a section, click report a sighting, automated UFO case report form pops up.
Mm-hmm.
You fill that out. The second you hit submit on that, automatically the state director of that state receives a text message on their cell phone and an email that this case sighting has been resubmitted.
Wow.
And we go from there.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else about MUFON that you can tell me about, or is that basically in a nutshell what it does?
That's pretty much in a nutshell what we do. I do a lot of lectures.
Mm-hmm.
I do lectures at libraries or groups.
Mm-hmm.
To educate the public. We actually have on Facebook, I started a MUFON youth group.
Oh, that's good.
Page so that it helps to educate the kids and young adults on ufology.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard someone say a while ago that there's a lot of older people involved, and they think the reason is most of the young people may still be involved or have interest, but they're they spend a lot of time on the internet.
I'm not sure that that's the case. I think right now younger adults and teenagers are more into the video games and the
the non-real life
and the chatting online than the.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure some are interested in it, but not interested enough to get involved in it. But if they do happen to go to the youth group site on Facebook, then if they're interested, they can follow through on that.
Yeah, that's a good place to start, Facebook. Does MUFON itself get involved with Facebook or just your division?
I think different states have different things. I think... different members have their own Facebook pages. MUFON does have its own Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So does New England MUFON. But right now, I started off with the six states. Right now, we're doing a revamping of the organization because the headquarters doesn't really want a state director to have too much. They would like to have, there are other state directors that were running maybe two states. Mm-hmm. They would like to have each director running one state. So we're kind of in a reorganization process where Maine and Connecticut right now have their own state directors. We'll be changing the website a little bit, and we'll have the Maine and Connecticut state directors' information on the website. Mm-hmm. But if anybody would like to get in touch with those states, they can email me, and I can get them in contact with the director in those two states.
Great. Let's say someone emails in through the Maine site, but they're in New England, that they had a sighting. So, and now the texts and emails bounce to you. So take it from here, exactly the steps that you would
do. Oh, well, what we do right now, I'd like people to understand that we are backed up at least 60, 70 cases. So if they put in a case and we don't contact them right away, that we will get to it as soon as we can. We try to email. First thing we try to do when we can is email the witness and see if we can set up an initial phone interview. In that phone interview, we determine whether it's something that we can explain. And if it's something we can explain, we also determine, is it something that warrants an on-site investigation?
Mm-hmm. Say you go to an on-site.
Well, I can give as an example a case. Yeah. I'm going to Rhode Island to investigate.
Okay.
There's two witnesses, two separate witnesses. I will interview each witness separately to get separate stories. Mm-hmm. And we will go. I have equipment that I can use. I have a laser rangefinder, so I can measure distances and actually walk through the sighting area and take measurements. And see what the how far the thing was away from these people, and verify those things. And after that, the interviews and the on-site is only part of the process because we after doing that, check with airports, check with.
I was going to ask you about that.
The military. I have a lot of success with the Air National Guard. Mm-hmm. Who's usually very cooperative. I have a program called See and Avoid, and it will show you. You can go to any area in the country, and it shows a map, and it shows where in that area that the military does low-level training exercises. Mm-hmm. So I can go on and look at that and contact the Air National Guard in that area and find out if they were doing any low-level training exercises, using military flares, different things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. For you to actually take it to the next step where you have to actually do an investigation, what makes that change from one that you wouldn't go on to one that you'd go on?
Well, it all depends. Each case is individually is different. You might have some that might not be possible. because of distance to go out and do an on-site investigation. But we do use Google Earth as a tool also.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
That can help us. We can actually go ground level from our computers on the area where the sighting is. That the place I'm going to on in Rhode Island on Monday, I already know what the house looks like from the street.
Yeah, that's amazing.
What the yard looks like. I know what the whole area looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of all this Google Earth and all that, what would you say has changed since the internet's come along, since you've been doing this so long? Besides that, is it everything?
Everything, absolutely, yeah. Everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it used to be, we can look up, it used to be difficult before computers, it used to be difficult to be able to retrieve information, because sometimes, especially on historical cases, people wouldn't, it'd be years afterwards, and they're just relying on their memory when they're giving you the case information.
Yeah.
Now, with things like weather details, you can go online, get historical weather data for that time.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of things. You can look up different... You can actually take a description of an object, and you can actually get atmospheric phenomena that we don't know about. There was one situation where somebody saw cones of light going to the ground. Mm-hmm. And we found out that what it was is a factory that had two stacks of bright lights up on the top of it. Mm-hmm. And it was cloudy that night. And what happens is the lights shine up and then back down. So they kind of reflect off the stacks, and it looked like two cones coming down out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an atmospheric type of situation too, and I learn. I'm constantly learning.
Yeah. There's so much to learn. Now, you mentioned that there's a lot of triangular sightings. Would you say the disc, the saucer, is second, and like cigars that ever come up the cigar shape?
I think saucer and cigar is pretty much the same. I think that cigar is a saucer being seen from the side.
You think that's...
I think that's what that is. But I think the newest number two is probably orbs.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people are seeing orbs.
Yeah, that's what it seems to... Like you hear a lot about that. And they're not necessarily big. A lot of times they're...
No, but there are explanations for some orb sighting. It's getting more and more popular. That's why when I investigate an orb sighting, I look at what time of year it is, if it's around a holiday, if it's around a beach area during the summer, where it's a lot of people out partying and doing things during the summer. People more and more use these things called Chinese lanterns.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They send them up, and those will look like little orbs floating across the sky.
Yeah. I think some people hoaxed by making those out of plastic or something. I heard something about.
Yeah, they take cans of Sterno and attach them to the bottom of those laundry bags.
Yeah,
and they light the Sterno, tape that around, and the hot air makes the rise.
Yeah, that's a lot of work for someone trying to do that.
Yeah. Some people, want to clown around.
Yeah, waste a lot of your time, I bet, or they can.
Well, usually we can.
You can screen them out.
That wouldn't be a case where I would really need to do an on-site on that. I think that was pretty well explainable. And I do get situations where people consider us debunkers. There was a situation online on Facebook where someone sent out a picture. They said, "Well, this is a picture of a UFO," and it was one of those group things on Facebook, and I entered my own opinion in. I entered it in, which was that, well, what it looked like to me was there was a street light. Mm-hmm. Right next to the street light, there was like a half lens shaped light. In between that was like a triangular shape angled between the street light and the lens shape. So I looked at it and I said, that looks like a lens flare, a camera lens flare, that the street light shining, hitting the lens of the camera, and making that effect, because they said they did not see it before they took the, when they took the picture.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah.
So someone, pretty much everybody in the group, you know, said, "Yeah, I agree with you. That's probably what it is." And then one person chimes in and says, "You know, well, not all UFOs are lens flares." Yeah. So they consider us. And my only answer was, well, I mean, everybody is entitled to their opinion. Mm-hmm. But with all due respect, I mean, it looks like a lens flare to me. I've seen lens flares before. Mm-hmm. But with all due respect, if we take every little case and we have a simple explanation, or a probable explanation for what it might be, we have to give it that explanation. If we don't do that, it cheapens the real sightings.
Now, I appreciate the fact that there's science involved, and it's not just like, okay, that's, you know, everything's a UFO, because like you say, there's so many people on YouTube that put videos up that are fake and hoaxes and, you know, try to get away with it. Mm-hmm. And it's really, I think YouTube is really difficult to figure out what's what on there. You know,
I mean, well, I think if the majority of things that are up on YouTube can be explained as other things, or some of them are downright just people that put these things together just to make a joke out of it.
Yeah, see who they can fool.
Yeah.
It's almost like making a computer virus in a way.
Yeah, I don't put a lot of stock in YouTube.
Yeah. What about the dome in Jerusalem? Do you know anything about that at all? I know you're not exactly in New England.
I did see that.
Yeah.
I did see the video, the film. It
looks convincing, but there's a lot of controversy about it. Yeah. And I just wondered if there's anything latest that you've heard about it.
I haven't heard anything, but at first when I first saw it, I was thinking, well, maybe that's something, you know, some kind of reflection or some kind of, you know, something like that. But then when you see the thing just rise back up, that was interesting.
Yeah.
So.
And they have it at like four different angles, camera angles or something. Yeah. There's like four different people.
Yeah, so it wasn't a reflection off of something. It seems to be that there was something there.
Yeah.
But I really didn't have time to go into any more deeper into investigating something like that. But
Now, do you ever have anyone send you? Now, we mentioned pictures earlier. Has anyone ever sent you film?
So some people do have film of different things. But again, when people, especially with film, I think one of the issues is similar to taking photographs. Even with a good camera, it can make a light or an object they're looking at look like a point of light or a star. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is in videos, the first thing they think of doing is zooming in on the object. And what that does is it pixelizes, especially with digital, it pixelizes the what you're seeing, and it distorts it. Mm-hmm. And it makes it look like something that it really isn't. Mm. So that, and another thing is some people will go out looking for, you know, UFOs, trying to videotape UFOs, and they use night vision and infrared. But all that does is complicates the matter, because the infrared can catch with any heat signature. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, instead, when somebody does something on infrared, I'm usually pretty skeptical. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many things that you could go out any night using infrared and catch something on a camera.
Yeah. So we're just about out of time right now. Is there anything you'd like to say to the listeners out there?
Yes. MUFON is always looking for members, looking for new investigators. Anyone can become an investigator. You don't have to be trained in it. You will. We have a field investigator's manual that you can study. Pass a field investigator's exam, and you would be working with an experienced investigator till you're experienced enough to go out on your own. And do it. So we are constantly, always looking for new investigators, new membership. The more we can get, a lot of the areas right now, the only place we're having meetings right now is they're having meetings in Connecticut, because they have a large membership and they have someone out there running meetings. the more members that we can get, the more feasible it will be to have meetings in that area.
Do they have to join the MUFON, New England MUFON, separately?
No.
It's all the same?
Your national membership to MUFON is your membership for the whole organization.
Great. Okay, well, this has been great. I especially like the car being lifted up. That's my favorite thing. But
it was interesting.
Yeah. Thanks so much. So this is Martin with Steve Fermini, and that's it for today.